The man was charged with a hate crime this week for allegedly attacking a transgender couple in La Crosse and using anti-gay slurs. Wisconsin's hate crime statute doesn't include protections on the basis of gender identity. That's not unique. Just under half of states have a hate crime law on the books that includes gender identity as a protected class. We're talking about the hate crime allegations against a La Crosse man and hate crime laws in Wisconsin and around the country. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about hate crime laws and how they work. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Hope Kerwin is a reporter for WPR based in La Crosse. Hope, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the hate crime part of this story, can you tell us about the alleged assault that's at the center of the story?
Yeah, so the criminal complaint says that Travis Crawford approached a teen couple in a public park on Tuesday, July 20th. It says that he started yelling at them, accused them of having sex in the park, and called them an anti-gay slur. When one of the teens told Crawford to go away, he then punched the boy in the face and started kicking him while he was on the ground. And the complaint does identify the victim of that physical assault as both a juvenile and as a transgender boy, and it identifies his girlfriend as transgender as well.
There are assault charges being filed in this case, but what got a lot of attention was whether or not hate crime charges could be added to that. Initially, no. Can you talk about the back and forth on whether hate crime charges could or would be filed?
Yeah, so there was some discussion on this issue when La Crosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds, came out with a public statement saying that, state hate crime statute does not include gender identity as a protected class, as you said. Well, I spoke with Deputy District Attorney in La Crosse today, and she said that they had originally considered hate crime, the hate crime enhancement, but wanted to gather more facts in the case, which is why they initially filed felony battery charges, but did not include that enhancement. She said after reviewing the facts of the case, speaking with the victims, and they were able to gather enough evidence that they felt confident they could prove that in this case, that Crawford allegedly attacked the teens based on his perception of their sexual orientation. He thought that they were gay based on his use of homophobic language. And so obviously it's important to remember that the charges in this case are just alleged at this point. It has not gone to court. But she says that's why they decided to go back and add the hate crime enhancer. And she says it's not unusual for them to amend charges after reviewing the case further.
And to be clear, though, it's because of anti-gay slurs being used in this case, which would be covered under the state's hate crime laws, not because of the transgender identity of the victims of the alleged attacks, which was not covered under hate crimes laws. Am I following this right, Hope?
Exactly. She reminded me that it's when it comes to the hate crime enhancement, it's about the attacker's motivation. It's about their perception, of the person rather than the actual identity of the person themselves. And so because they feel that they have evidence that Crawford's motivation was based on his perception of the two teens' sexual orientation, which is a protected characteristic under state hate crime laws, that they were able to pursue this enhancement.
And you had mentioned, Hope, local officials talking about this issue and hoping that the legislature will tackle this issue. What are they hoping the state would change in its hate crimes laws?
Yeah, so La Crosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds, I spoke with him today about the addition of the hate crime enhancement. He said, while he was pleased to see that it doesn't let state lawmakers off the hook in this case, that, he felt that there really needed to be explicit language to protect people based on their gender identity. LGBTQ groups in La Crosse as well as across the state have also, called for similar action, saying that gender identity and gender expression should be protected under state hate crime statutes. So, that call has not been addressed.
Hope, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Happy to do it.
Hope Kerwin is a reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio based in La Crosse. She told us about hate crime charges against a man who allegedly attacked a transgender couple while using anti-gay slurs in La Crosse. Now let's take a look at hate crime statutes in Wisconsin and around the United States. There are federal hate crime laws in place, but at the state level, there are a lot of differences from one state to another in terms of what these laws do and don't cover, and some states don't have their own hate crime laws at all. Melissa Michelson joins us now. She's Dean of Arts and Science and a professor of political science at Menlo College in California. She's an expert on LGBTQ rights. Melissa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
How common is it for states to have specific hate crime laws related to transgender identity?
It's not. One of the great mismatches in the protections of LGBTQ rights is that while a lot of folks think there should be protections, including anti-slur hate crime legislation, in most states and at the federal level, there really aren't those sorts of protections in place.
Now, in this case, it was kind of a strange borderline thing where the victims of this alleged attack in La Crosse are transgender youth, but the attacker used anti-gay slurs, which prosecutors are saying does mean the state's hate crimes law does apply here. Do we see this kind of weird gray area blurring in cases like this often?
I think the more important takeaway from this actually is how the umbrella consideration of LGBTQ does cover gender expression. And the reason that it's an umbrella classification is that they share, all members of this community share that they challenge assumptions about gender presentation and gender role. And so while we might try to make these more solid distinctions between, well, these people, it's a sexual orientation identity, and these people, it's a gender identity, really what we're talking about is people who challenge gender norms. And that's the reason that they've come together. That's the reason, as y'all just mentioned, that advocacy organizations are saying you have to protect gender identity and gender presentation, gender expression in these laws. So it's not very common that the law is protected, but I think we're moving in that direction, and particularly in the light of the Bostock decision from the Supreme Court.
Can you talk about that decision and why it may be affecting what states are doing?
Sure. So folks might remember that this was a case where the Supreme Court decision written by Neil Gorsuch said that people who are members of a sexual orientation minority or a gender identity minority are all protected by the Civil Rights Act of 1965 because the ways in which they all need protection are from violations of what is expected of them based on their sex. And so even though the Civil Rights Act of 1965 only specifically mentions protections against discrimination based on sex, that implies and thus gives constitutional coverage to violations of people's rights based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. And the cases that were considered were specifically about gay people and transgender people. And so what this means is that the Supreme Court is saying laws that protect against sex discrimination also cover LGBTQ people. And so logically, that's going to trickle down to the state level in Wisconsin, to the local level in places like La Crosse, to say, well, if sex discrimination is illegal, and if we allow for protections of those rights, then logically, we also have to use those laws to protect members of the LGBTQ community.
So if I'm hearing you right, does that mean that Wisconsin's current hate crime law, which is not does not specify transgender identity, could it be used under that interpretation without being changed by the state legislature to protect transgender individuals?
Well, I think what advocacy groups don't want to see is that you'd have to take this all the way to the Supreme Court or to a district court to confirm that that's how they're going to be interpreting the laws in light of Bostock. And so I do think it offers, I do think it offers better protection and more immediate protection for folks if the legislation is changed. And I would add that part of what we saw in this case and what we often see in these cases is that individuals don't always call the police, right? Or are concerned about calling the police if they're members of an LGBTQ community because they don't think they'll be taken seriously, because they don't think hate crime extensions will be added to the battery charges. And so if the legislature acts and extends the law, that's sending a signal that, yes, we do care about transgender and gender nonconforming people, and you are protected, and we don't allow for hate crimes against members of this community. So it's an important signal to the community that their rights are going to be protected. And it's going to mean that they're going to be more often to contact law enforcement when something happens. And so it protects everybody better and more immediately if the legislature acts.
We're talking to Melissa Michelson, Dean of Arts and Science and a professor of political science at Menlo College. She's talking to us about hate crime laws across the country, especially as they relate to sexual orientation and gender identity. You can join in, not, by the way, at our usual 800 number. Apparently there's a problem with that. Here is a substitute number for you. Ready? 608-890-3452. That's 608-890-3452. Do you think Wisconsin's hate crimes laws should specifically include gender identity? What do you want to know about laws protecting LGBTQ people in Wisconsin and across the U.S., especially when it comes to these hate crime enhancers in cases like this alleged assault in La Crosse? Call in at 608-890-3452. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Melissa Michelson, Dean of Arts and Science and Professor of Political Science at Menlo College. We're talking about why hate crime laws are different in states around the country and why many of them don't include protection based on gender identity. An issue here in Wisconsin with an alleged assault in La Crosse last week. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions about how this all works at a temporary number, 608-890-3452. That's 608-890-3452, or email ideas@WPR.org. Melissa, can you tell us a little bit about the history of hate crimes enhancers, especially as they apply to LGBTQ people around the country?
Well, we really haven't had a lot of protections for LGBTQ people. And that only happened recently in the wake of the Matthew Shepard case, which folks might be familiar with. And so when that young man was tied to a fence and assaulted and left to die, there was a national uproar that a young gay man had been abused and killed in that way. And then there was an assault against a Black man, James Byrd. And so now we have the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd hate crime law on the books, but that has only been a law at the federal level for a couple of decades. It's really been a pretty recent phenomenon where people are taking these sorts of hate crimes seriously. And of course, there's an ongoing debate about whether or not we should be enhancing penalties for crimes based on what people say or what people think, or whether crimes should just be about what people do and about the battery or the assault that they're perpetrating and not necessarily why. And so obviously the tide has been shifting recently where we are having more and more hate crime enhancements for this sort of behavior as a way of messaging that it's not okay. But it's really not very widespread and very recent that that has been happening.
Let's bring on a caller now at 608-890-3452. Dave is with us in Toma. Dave, hi.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to say I think these enhancement laws are ridiculous. Does that mean if somebody that likes us beats us up, it's okay? I mean, the law is not being applied evenly to everybody. Why is one group more important than another? It's kind of ridiculous.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. And Melissa, you just alluded to that debate. Can you talk about the reasoning behind the existence of hate crime laws? As I understand it, originally post-Civil War and civil rights era, the idea was if you're targeting people to prevent their participation in public life, from voting, for example, because of their category, that's where the hate crimes kick in. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Right. So the idea behind hate crime enhancements is that when you're perpetrating a hate crime, you're attacking a whole community and silencing a whole community. And so, for example, when the Klan burns a cross on a Black family's lawn, it's not just a crime against that family, it's a crime against the whole Black community, because it is saying to them, you're not welcome here and you are in danger. So don't try to exercise your civil rights. And similarly, when there are hate crimes perpetrated against members of the LGBTQ community, it is not just that individual or that couple that's being attacked. It's an attack on the whole community. So that's why we have those hate crime enhancements. It's because those hate crimes are different than quote unquote regular assaults or, you know, an assault by somebody who likes you or isn't necessarily biased against you because of your identity. It's silencing and it's violence against the whole broader community of people.
Dave, thanks a lot for calling in at our temporary number, 608-890-3452. That's 608-890-3452. Talk about hate crime laws, especially as they apply to on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity after a case that brought those issues up here in Wisconsin. Melissa Michelson is with us, Dean of Arts and Science and Professor of Political Science at Menlo College in California. Still time for your calls with questions or your thoughts at 608-890-3452. Melissa, when a state has a hate crimes enhancer law or at the federal level, do we see them being applied pretty consistently from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, or does it really depend on, say, who's prosecuting the case?
Yeah, you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. There's a lot of inconsistency in the ways that these laws are applied and in the ways that the data are reported, which is another way that the federal government has changed the way we respond to hate crimes in recent years. Some states, for example, Alabama, apparently has had zero hate crimes against LGBTQ people in recent years. And, you know, logic just tells me that that's unlikely. It's just that they're going unreported. And so it's not just that there's inconsistency in the way that the laws are applied, but again, that there's inconsistency in reporting because of perceptions of the degree to which people will be taken seriously or that they'll face further harassment and dehumanization from law enforcement. And so it really does depend on the local context and the degree to which local law enforcement or state law enforcement officials and lawyers are going to take seriously that hate crimes are a problem that terrorizes a community.
Is there any kind of effort to get consistency among the many, many, say, police jurisdictions around this country to say, here's how we're hoping you're going to handle potential hate crimes. Here's how we're hoping you're going to report it to the federal government, even if it's not prosecuted, so we can track these things?
Yeah, there are laws on the books that request that all law enforcement jurisdictions around the country report their data, but it is not required. And of course, even if it's required that they report what they have, again, many people are just not reporting. And so that's why I think it does come down to the state and local level, where if you do have these laws on the books that very specifically say we're taking these sorts of hate crimes against the LGBTQ community seriously, then that signals, right, to people that they should report, signals to law enforcement that they should be keeping those statistics and reporting them. But you can't just impose that at the federal level and expect everyone around the country to decide that, okay, we are now going to take this seriously and we're concerned about this violence. The truth is violence against transgender and gender nonconforming people is pretty rampant. And even the statistics that we do have show that reports are increasing. And so while we may be making advances in terms of acceptance of same-sex marriage, we are still pretty far away from acceptance of the idea that there is a gender continuum and that transgender, non-binary, genderqueer people are a real thing and not something to fear or something to deny.
You mentioned that hate crimes enhancers on the basis of sexual orientation is itself pretty recent and spread through many states in the country pretty quickly. Do you sense any sort of beginning momentum when it comes to gender identity?
There's definitely been a push for that in the advocacy community and in some of the more blue or more progressive parts of the country, especially in the wake of the Obergefell decision. So now the attention has turned to transgender rights. But of course, you know that at the same time, we've really seen a backlash in many parts of the country and attacks on transgender people, on transgender youth playing in sports, and specifically, and also on medical care for transgender youth. And so it's become yet another polarizing issue where on one side, we have people who want to allow transgender people to live openly, to participate in sports, to get the medical care that they need. And then on the other side, folks who are continuing to deny transgender people their humanity and to try to exclude them from these everyday activities like getting medical care and playing sports.
In our last minute or so, Melissa, what are you watching? Where are your eyes turned now when it comes to protections for transgender people? State legislatures, federal government, the courts? What's foremost in your mind right now?
What I'm looking at right now is what's happening at the state level. As I just mentioned, there's really been a flurry of laws at the state level trying to take away rights from transgender youth in healthcare and in sports. And all over the country, they're solving a problem that doesn't exist, right? They're banning transgender youth from sports, allegedly to protect girls from unfair competition from youth that they see as biologically male, and really hurting youth, especially given that there is no problem to fix, and all it's doing is telling transgender youth that they're not valued, that their feelings don't matter, and that there's something wrong with them. And then at the same time, we've got all these state laws now taking away access to care, access to hormones, access to the kinds of things that keep transgender youth safe, because the number one risk to transgender people is mental health and suicidal ideation and depression that leads them to do things that are dangerous to themselves, including abusing drugs and alcohol. What we need to keep our youth in this country safe is to give them access to healthcare and to accept them for who they are, not try to make them think that they are a monster, that there's something wrong with them. And I mean, if we care about the lives of these young people, we've got to push back.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Melissa Michelson from Menlo College.